on ABC Radio.
This is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
It's The Big Fish with Rob Paxavanis from Fishing Australia, and that's exactly what he does. He goes fishing all around Australia. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning. Yeah, no, it's a fantastic job.
It is. Sure. It's a pretty simple mission statement. It's exactly what it's about. You've been everywhere, man. You're like Lucky Star. But let's have a look at some of the places coming up in the new series. Batemans Bay, Port Macquarie, Marimbula, Coffs Harbour.
Port Stephens,
Stinker's Backyard. You've also been doing a lot of work with New South Wales Maritime on life jackets. We might start with that because that is the life-saving information we need. What's this about a selector guide? That sounds like an interesting tool.
Well, New South Wales Maritime have on their website, and if you just Google New South Wales Maritime life jackets, it'll all pop up. They have a selector tool which helps you sort of choose the life jacket for your scenario. You know, are you jet skiing? Are you going out with the kids? Are you boating alone? Are you, you know, are you storing a life jacket because you're in a massive boat and, you know, it's more like a houseboat? Or are you in heightened scenarios of risk? But, you know, I always wear my life jacket when I'm out on the water, but there's scenarios where you've got to wear them by law, like boating alone and when you're in certain size boats, crossing bars, you know, etc. So the life jacket guide and the rules about life jackets are very, very well presented on the New South Wales Maritime website. And, you know, the selector guide there is fantastic, you know, but I mean, I sort of urge people to wear them. You know, I like the inflatable ones. What I love anglers out there to think about when they're heading out on the boat is when they're getting their gear ready and they're getting all excited, you know, the flatties are on or the yellowfin are on. As part of that, we all check the weather, and alongside that, I want to check your safety gear. They have a wonderful sort of safety gear checklist. So, you know, check the weather, make sure your life jackets and everything's up to scratch, and do that alongside when you're getting all your fishing gear ready. And that way our fellow anglers are going to be safe. Less time rescuing people and more time fishing, you know. So it makes great sense for everybody, you know. Who doesn't want to come home, you know? But let me put it to you this way, Scotty. Who's going to defend our fishing stories if we don't come home alive, right?
That's right. Yes, exactly. I love the fact that there's a photo of every different style. So there's level 150 plus, the inflatable life jacket. There's level 100, the foam life jacket for general boating. That's the one that I wear. Then you've got ones, I do like the ones for paddling. They're a little bit sleeker and less tabs and locks, because that's where your line gets caught. You know, the slimmer ones, the level 50, the level 50S foam life jacket for paddling, that would be okay in a small boat in enclosed waters over the sand flats where I do most of my fishing. So it's a really good guide, isn't it?
Yeah, all the rules, what it is, it's that honestly, New South Wales Maritime, they lead the way with this. They're ahead of all the other states because they have this good, clear information that you can go and pick the jacket you want that suits your scenario, and then, you know, you can go to the shop for some more advice when you pick it up. It's very, very cool.
So now we've got the life jacket on.
Yes.
On the big fish. Let's go fishing. Where do we start? Indeed. Gee, you've had a lot of fun at Port Stephens, and look, Stinker raves about it every week. He says it's the greatest spot in the world. Is he pulling our leg? I mean, I've caught some good fish there.
I'll tell you, he's definitely top 5 or 10. Look, it's such a big harbour with, you know, such good fishing and such the intricate little waterways that sort of spin off the one side, and it's a fantastic harbour without, you know, the sort of fishing pressure that our bigger harbours get. And it is a fishing wonderland. There's no question about it. You know, in sometimes we've gone there and we've got the big flathead and the bream and then gone out to sea and got the tuna and the marlin and then come inshore and did jewies all in sort of 4 or 5 days on the ground. But one of our standout fish this time was sort of chasing the long tail. I won't spoil all the surprises, but chasing the long tail tuna in the bay there, and that's a world class.
They often come into the port in big numbers, and they're big fish, and sometimes they're not easy to catch, are they?
Yeah, you got to know how to approach them, and we'll probably chat more about tuna in a minute. But not spoiling it for others, staying upwind, casting at them, and some days they want stick bait, some days they want, you know, smaller metal lures, you know. So matching the hatch and chasing them and doing it the right way. When you hook one, you know, some of the bays there are sort of maximum sort of 4 or 5 meters deep. So you gotta you're hooking in a long tail tuna on the whiting and squid grounds, you know what I mean, and garfish grounds. So it's pretty full on, and you know, we fish with Paul Lennon there too, local icon, you know, he showed us some great stuff. And yeah, like that's our first show of the season. That's coming up Saturday week. And that's, I won't spoil too many of the surprises, mate, but it's a Stinkers. Yeah. I can see why he doesn't want to move. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was funny. Stinker was crook a few weeks back, and he got 11-year-old Max Evans to fill in for him, and Max is just fishing obsessed, and he knows Paul's young bloke, and he got a long tail at 11 out of Paul's boat that nearly pulled his arms off. And great kid. They went up to Iluka on holidays, and I said to his granddad, Bruce, I said, Bruce, get the skillet ready, he'll catch you something. They called me as soon as they got there. Bruce said, I was unpacking the car. Max comes walking back across the sand flats to the unit we were staying in with a 60-centimetre flathead, and he said, there, Pop, there's one for dinner.
Oh, mate, so good.
Paul Lennon? How good is Paul Lennon? I mean, is he the best fisherman in Australia or what?
Yeah, I'd be close. If he's top five, put it that way. In New South Wales, he'd be right up there. I mean, he's, his dad's commercial fishing, and just, you know, he lives and breathes it, and a top fella, and he's our go-to guy. When we get down there, he shows us around, and he's very sharing with his knowledge, and, you know, he's across so much, you know, a valuable asset to New South Wales fisheries. I know he works on a few of their sort of projects as well. So, you know, having that information passed down through generations is just great for the management of our fish. He's a dead set legend. Yeah.
No, I'm sure you'll paint Port Stephens in a very, very good light.
You can't help it.
No, it's such a beautiful place with those giant sentinel volcanoes at the mouth of the harbour, the deep access, the islands offshore. It's just got it all, the blue sandy water, the estuaries, the Karua, the Myall. I mean, it's just magnificent. Batemans Bay, Marimbula, they're your old stomping ground. When you're in Canberra and on the south coast, spent a lot of your youth there. So you're revisiting those spots on this upcoming series, are you?
Yeah, and I've still got a little, absolutely. Big special on Marimbula, big special on Batemans Bay. Again, you know, we're just intertwining safety tips through the shows, you know, keep people safe along the way, and just it comes in line with you know, when you're planning your trip, you're looking at the weather, and you know, it actually helps you. And what's big for me is options. You know, I mean, if it's too rough offshore, what can you do inland? How, you know, up the river, and how can you do it and still catch good fish and not have a sort of a bummer of a day where you didn't get to go out on the only day you had off. But look, Marimbula, fantastic. We did a huge story on the salmon run, the comeback of the salmon and the white sharks and everything like that, and film with Trapman as well. There's a couple of extremely funny moments that I won't spoil a surprise.
Trapman's a bit of a YouTube sensation, isn't he?
Mostly on Facebook, but he's a commercial fisher, but he's bridged the gap a bit between, you know, commercial and rec fish shows, because he does both, and he's got a platform on Facebook where he gets to explain how certain things happen. Like, you know, for example, everyone thought he was, you know, trapping all the big snapper, but his traps are made not to let big snapper in, so the big breeders go. And he's got, you know, explains quotas and different things quite nicely. He's a good lad. His heart's in the right spot.
He's a pretty keen pretty keen wreck angler too. It's not all about pulling the traps, is it? He likes to wet a line as well.
So he's grown up on the New South Wales coast. You know, his dad was a commercial fisher in Sydney, and then he moved down to Birmingham a bit over a decade ago, and got a beautiful daughter who's around about 10 years old, Indy, who they just go fishing together when he's not out working the traps. They're off the beach catching salmon off the rocks, and they're up the river catching flathead and bream. You know, and he does have some remarkable stuff that happens. He had a mother and calf, a humpback whale, the other day, getting chased around by the males, and it hit under his boat three times. They had to move three times. So he puts the drone up and captures some extraordinary footage. He's well worth you know, checking out what he gets up to. He's on the water a lot.
Bermagui,
yeah. We ended up with him because we couldn't get out through the bar at Naruma. It was just too rough, and we wanted to show people, well, you can go to, there's other options, you know, that are, you know, sort of on the right day can be safe alternatives, you know. And so we went out with him. That was great. But, yeah, we'll wait and see what we have to – you know, a little bit of an insight. Salmon schools can be everywhere. When they're in range of the beach, there you get sick of catching them, right? We did show what to do, how to cook them, how to smoke them, and different things, which is great. But they just stayed out of casting range most of the time, and a few extreme measures that we went to catch one. And I won't spoil it, but it's very.
I mean,
very
we've exciting. Been on schools that have gone, you know, off Moon Island up to Catho. We're talking about a school that extends for 2 kilometres. And the lure fishers will be zooming around, and they're not interested. They want a tiny little fly, you know, a little surf candy or something, stripped really fast, and then you're catching on your fly rod one after the other, and no one else is catching. You know, they can be quite fickle. At other times, I went down to the beach a few months back when they were really on the run, and things were perfect, overcast, and the tide. It was a great big tide right up. The gutter was really full. I had a block of pilchards in my shoulder bag, and I put the first pilchard on, bang, 8-pound salmon. Put the next pilchard on, bang, 6-pound salmon. Put the next pilchard on, bang, 10-pound salmon, the biggest I'd ever caught. And I thought, I used 4 pilchards. I said, I'm not going to be able to carry these bloody things. That was it. The session was over in 15 minutes. And beautiful fish cakes for the family and the neighbours. But boy, when they're on.
Yeah, part of the story we filmed at Murrumbilla was about the comeback of the salmon. You know, we talked with guys who run canneries since they were kids, and, you know, so it's not just about catching the salmon, but the massive comeback has eventuated to the point where, you know, God forbid, they're probably going to have to think about, you know, maybe catching them and smoking them and that, because there is a lot of them.
Yeah, but you think of all of those beautiful animals like the grey nurse shark, the beautiful bottlenose dolphins, the magnificent seals. That's tucker for them, isn't it? We'll see more seals come back and more beautiful dolphins come back if there's more food for them. So, and the bigger pelagic fish too, your marlin and those other tuna that we chase. I mean, they're natural. It's not unnatural to have a good school of salmon.
No, it's not. What happened? No, it's not. We spoke to the guys from the cannery. You know, they're 60-year-old guys, and, you know, they tell us about the schools that used to be there that disappeared, and now they're making a comeback because they're not netted. It's a fascinating story. But you're right. You know, what I'm getting at is the salmon, you're 100% right. They are natural, and they do bring the fish. They bring the sharks and the game fish and everything back in, and they get a good feed out of them. And I'd like to see a little boutique fishery though, where people, you know, maybe catch them and smoke them and sort of provide that to, you know, people that don't get to go fishing, you know, because there are a lot of them. There's no question. There's massive schools. But yeah, look, you know, I probably on the other end of the spectrum, something that's still growing is the yellowfin tuna, you know. And I've been blessed to, you know, have fished the yellowfin tuna run in the sort of late 70s, 80s in particular, you know, when they just weren't fished for. And, you know, we've had such a huge run of yellowfin, you know, along the south coast, you know, roughly between Sydney and Eden. And, you know, everyone raving about how good it is, and it is fantastic. But, you know, I think with a little bit of careful management, we could push back towards what it was in the 80s if we manage that stock carefully, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And I believe they're a very fast-grown fish, so people are catching fish around the 25 to 40-kilo mark and the odd bigger one out on the shelf. You know, some of them are of immense proportions, but they were much bigger back in the day. Is that fair to say, or is that just looking back in rose-coloured glasses?
No, 100%. Actually, 100%. If anyone fished in the – particularly in the early 80s, and, you know, some years would be stronger than others, but – you know, so you drive away from sort of 20, 30 kilo fish. So they're a pest, you know, like people catching, you wouldn't bother weighing a fish unless it looked over 80, 90 kilos. And so what's happening now is people are, you know, catching those sort of 20 to 40 kilo fish, a better one's 50, maybe 55, 60, you know, and that's notable. You know, someone catches a 60 kilo fish, it's everyone, really look at that, you know. And then a very, very occasionally you might get a 70. So if you rewind back to the 80s, a 70 kilo fish, you wouldn't even get a photo with it. You know, it's and this is, you're talking about you know, 1% of the boats were out there. So way, way less boats catching way, way bigger fish, you know, inside Montagu Island. You didn't even go past Montagu Island. You know, you're catching them on the 4 and the 6 mile out of Bermagui regularly, you know what I mean? And everyone wants that 100-kilo fish, you know, and that was the benchmark, you know. And people were catching them, you know. People would go and catch them. You'd target them if you spent a
week. So what do you think of the regulations? A lot of people on the South Coast with this run are saying, hey, we're probably taking too many. It's very generous. The bag limit is very generous because it's too much fish for one family to eat.
Well, what we've got to realise is that people are saying, it's such a good inshore run of tuna. You know, they've been seen and busting up within, you know, sight of the land. A few have been caught land-based. But, you know, boats are going, hey, we're on the flathead ground catching yellowfin. And that's been true from, you know, Jervis Bay down to Eden, right? So what happens is these fish, what people are going to stand, they grow exceptionally fast. And an old mate of mine taught me that the best freezers down there. So those 30-kilo fish are 60, 70 kilos in a year or two. You know, I think they only live about 7 or 8 years. Like they can die of old age quickly, these things, right? So they're feeding machines, you know. So those 40, 50-kilo jobs, you're talking, you know, in 2 or 3 years, they're 100-kilo fish. So if we keep those bag limits down and only take what we need, and a lot of people are abiding by this, but there are people that are, going out and keeping their bag each day. Okay, that's within the law, fair enough, you know. But if the bag limits changed a bit, and there is, you know, there's a little bit of poaching going on. People are catching them, and, you know, people are scared to dob these people into fisheries, but there's poaching going on. If we could look after that stuff, the professional guys have got quotas they stick to. If us rec guys can sort of keep an eye out for each other and just put a little bit of pressure, but guys are doing the wrong thing, you know, just subtly at the right time, we can look after that stock a bit better. Trust me that people won't be talking about a quarter 50 kilo fish anymore. They'll be talking about that 60, 70, 80 kilo fish, and within a couple of years, you'll be back to the ton. If we can look after them, everything's there. The bait inshore, we get a couple of good runs of bait inshore, they will come in and feed. So, you know, the pros have been doing the right thing, sticking to their bags, and they're monitored very closely. Most of the rec guys are doing the right thing. So look after the tuna, really care for the ones you catch, you know. When you see people coming in with 6 tuna or 5 tuna on the deck or whatever the bag limit is, you know, I don't even bother looking because 1 or 2 is enough for us. But when you see them coming in with sunbaked tuna on the deck and you know it's not going to be premium quality, you know it's not going to be good for sashimi, the guys will say, oh, yeah, it tastes good, but when they don't know the difference or they, you know, haven't looked after the fish like it should be, you're better off having 1 or 2 prime quality fish that would fetch thousands of dollars, you know, on the Jap market, and you're going to impress your neighbours with that than getting sick of eating it and feeding your neighbour's cattle, you know, trying to feed the street. We've got to get out of that mentality.
Good point.
We've got to get out of that mentality and really look after the ones we catch and be proud of those sparkling prime specimens we bring back properly iced up in every case, you know, and let those other ones go. Tag them, do something for research, do something for fisheries, do something for your neighbour, do something for yourself, because you're going to go out and chasing them next year. And when you go, where are they? We can't just say, oh, the currents are wrong. Yeah, of course the currents help bring them in. But if we look after them, these fish spawn and the numbers build fast. These fish grow quick if we look after them. That's it. That's all we've got to do.
Good point. Paxi, hey, great to catch you again. We'll catch you on Fishing Australia. And next time we have a chat too, you've got a great story about what we do with fish waste, what can be done positive with the frames and after we clean our fish. It's a good yarn. We'll share it with the listeners next time.
I've got a couple of rippy yarns for you, mate, that I always keep up my sleeve and enjoy those shows on Maroombula and Port Stephens and Bateman's Bay. I love showcasing New South Wales coastline and teaching people how to fish, helping people to fish sustainably and responsibly, mate, because and I get plenty of tips myself along the way, mate. We're always learning. That's the fun bit, mate.
Absolutely. When you stop learning, you're dead. Tight lines, mate.
No worries, Scotty. Cheers, mate. Have a ripper morning.
Rob Paxavanis there from Fishing Australia on The Big Fish. It's The Big Fish, and the other day on the show, Craig McGill was asking the question of New South Wales Maritime about flag flying, and he's been on Sydney Harbour for 30 years and seen things change. Craig, you wanted a few answers, and I've been able to get some from the crew at Maritime. They say the Australian national flag takes precedence in Australia over all other flags when flown in the company of other flags. When flown in the community, the order of precedence of flags is the Australian national flag, including the Australian red ensign, the national flag of other nations, state or territory flags, other flags prescribed by the Flags Act of 1953, including the Australian Aboriginal flag and the Torres Strait Islander flag, ensigns and pennants, local government flags, Commonwealth, state and territory agencies, and non-government organisations. So that pretty much takes in any flag to fit an event. It might be Mardi Gras, it might be NAIDOC Week or something like that. And so the Australian flag would fly first in the colour of the red ensign, which is the Australian flag equivalent on the water, Craig. So I hope that answers your question.
Yep, that's good, mate. I hope we get that sorted out because, you know, I have seen a couple of the VSOs out there sort of taking it upon themselves to just fly flags without including the Australian flag. Well, at the exclusion of the Australian flag, which I don't think's on at all. I think it's great to see all those diversity flags there, but not at the exclusion of the Australian flag. So,
is it nice to see them together, Craig? Saying that, yes, that Australia is an inclusive country, that people are welcome, regardless of their sexuality or nationality or whatever culture they come from.
Yes, 100%, especially around event times and that sort of thing. But, you know, just in general, I think that's great.
Anyway, you might see the red ensign and the other flags now flying from New South Wales Maritime, according to the Flag Act of 1953. Hey, what's biting, Craig?
Mate, you know, this is a bit bizarre. You know how we've been talking over the last few weeks about how weird the fishing's been and the warm water and the odd currents and how fishing's just been all over the place and weird things turning up in weird spots. Normally the flatties here breed in April, but we've just had the most amazing run of seriously big flathead. I'm talking like the smallest was 70, so nothing to keep, unfortunately. They're all going back. But between 70 and 95, and just like, I'm talking a lot of them, one after the other. We got four yesterday, between 70 and 95 in a half hour period, which indicates to me that there's a bit of a breeding congregation out there. We put them all back, of course, because the new rule says, you know, none over 70. Although I'll tell you something interesting. I was never that comfortable with that when they brought that rule in regards to the commercial fishermen not having to abide to that. And here's a bit of an irony for you. I was down at Warringah Mall, and there's a good fish shop down there, and I was with my daughter. I said, let's just go and see what they're selling. And there was a tray of dusky flathead there, and at least three of the fish on that tray, I couldn't see all the ones underneath, but they were whole fish, and at least three of them were over 70 centimetres. And I just thought, you know, there I am letting them go and doing the right thing, and yet I can come in here and buy, you know, pretty much that same fish. Who knows? Could even be the same fish. Not likely, but it's possible. You know, I just think that sort of rule needs to be reviewed a little bit.
Yes, it seems weird that it's a sustainable practice for wreck fishing, and yet the commercial sector who share the same resource can do things that are unsustainable. Yeah. Anyway, that's a question for the fisheries minister, I guess. We'll go to them now. You keep giving us these questions. We'll go and try to find answers for you, yeah. Craig McGill. Yeah. We'll follow it up. We'll follow it up because they do get back to us. And, you know, we love to let our listeners know on the big fish what's going on. And the flathead in my estuary have just been phenomenal. Fish between the 36-centimetre mark and sort of the 50-centimetre mark, beautiful eating fish, the right ones to take. The males leave the big females alone. They're full of eggs, and it must be a tragedy to see a giant female fish in the fish shop window after it's been netted by the pros and think there's a million baby flathead. And I think they're really benefiting too from the wreck sector letting the big breeding fish go, because I've never seen better flathead fishing in my local estuary as well. We've been jigging them up. We've been catching them. We've been chasing whiting on live bait and brim on live bait, catching some lovely whiting and brim, but also catching so many flathead. And I think it must be the only thing I can think of to see so many of them would be that letting the big breeders go is starting to have an impact. Tight lines, Craig McGill. I'll let you get back onto Sydney Harbour.
Thanks, mate. Talk soon.
And according to New South Wales Fisheries, research indicates an 80-centimetre female dusky flathead can produce around 2 million eggs in a season through multiple spawning events. These large females are vital for maintaining the health of the fish population because of the sheer numbers of eggs they produce. One 80-centimetre fish can produce 10 times more eggs than a 36-centimetre female, and as many as 12 smaller specimens would produce together.
Oh, get out of it, bloody seagulls.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find him? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott.
Talking about odd things this morning, I was thinking of those whales that often swim over to the gunwale of Stinkpot, because it's obviously a very inviting boat. It's smaller than their calves. And they put their big, beautiful, mournful eye over the gunwale and look straight at you, and they'd say to the other whales, "I just saw something very odd."
Yeah, well, look, yeah, it's when I look back for all the time I've been on the water, and I'm only counting Port Stephens, I'm not counting all my childhood adventures at Tweed Heads, and there's another story. We might talk about that one day, because there was always something happening up there with the friends I had. We were always on the, we were river rats, and there's still river rats. And you know what? I must say, and this pleases me greatly to say this, that there are more and more kids being involved in fishing. There's a bit of a resurgence, which is a fight back from those that spend their time in bedroom looking at screens. So I reckon there's a bit of a kickback because kids are starting to realise that there's far more to life than what's on a screen in your bedroom. And by getting out, particularly in a boat, so parents, I'm encouraging you to either buy the young boy or girl a fishing rod, some fishing gear. This is for Christmas under the tree. Or if you've got a very big tree and a bigger pocket, go and buy a little tinny. Gee, and it gives the kids independence. I think you can get some sort of a license over the age of 12 or something like that. You'd have to check on that, but I'm not too sure about the boat license business. And you may well have to be with an adult. But that's fine. That's all good. But my message is get on the water and start experiencing it as soon as you can, because my memories are indelible. And I had so much fun. And that's what it's all about, Scott.
Great fun. Yeah, I've got great memories of staying at my grandparents who had a creek at the front and a lagoon at the back that opened up into Lake Macquarie. And they had a little rowing boat, and I'd put Lula Bell, their little cranky dog, in the front. And I'd take fishing gear, and I took a little notebook and a pencil, and I used to draw maps of the estuaries and draw maps of the mangroves. And we'd go right up these little tiny estuaries at high tide, and you know, people had their backyards there, and these big dogs had run at us. We catch huge eels and nothing any good. The odd mud crab would try to eat us, and you know, we had these adventures, and my brother and I, we'd draw these maps, the detailed maps. We thought we were like junior Captain Cooks of all the twists and turns of the mangrove swamp, you know, and we had these secret places, and we'd do that for hours and hours and hours, Stinker. But I think one of the things that child psychologist Dr. John Irvine said to me, because I used to do a regular spot with him, and he said that peer pressure will always trump parental pressure. And we've got kids like Max Evans, who almost took your job when you got sick, by the way. It was lucky you got well. you did put him forward for it. When you got kids like Max Evans, who's such a terrific young 11 or 12-year-old, then the other kids come and say, "Can I go fishing with you?" Then he'll show them how to tie a knot, and then they're away.
That's it. And then you've got them hooked, so to speak. And you can't be it's a pleasure. It's still, to me, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, but I've still got the desire that I had when I was a kid. So how good's that? I mean, I can get excited about a fishing trip still, and I'll never, ever get over it. So I think it's healthy, really, to get out and get about. And there's so many opportunities arise through fishing, and just appreciation, basically an appreciation of what's around you. Then you become more environmentally alert, and you more care for your natural resources. I mean, more care for birds than any other creature that you might see. It's a lesson in life. But whales, let's get back to whales. Oh, dear me. They're starting to be a nuisance. Now, I don't know how you tell a whale that they're a nuisance. I don't know how you go about it. But they are a most magnificent creature. And one of the strangest questions I'm ever asked when I report a whale, I say, was it a big one? Well, of course it's a big one.
All a whales big one? Are big.
Even little whales are big. No, I can't say. No, it was a little whale. There's no such thing as a little whale.
Everything's big compared to stink pot, stinker.
That's right. But then, see, they're becoming so inquisitive, and that's my issue. I have more trouble with whales than any other creature when I'm out on the water. And it's not as if they're doing anything nasty. It's just that they're sticky beaks, and they want to know what's going on. And I did mention on this program once or twice about one that came within a metre and a half of my tinny and stopped swimming. And then another one lay beside that. And I mean, and again, I didn't have my phone or a passenger, so it's just word of mouth. And I just thought, how magnificent. How could, you know, your heart just races up. You're not frightened. It's you're excited and you're thankful. That's what I get. And I'm sort of only fishing probably less than 100 metres from the rocks, which is good because that's about the extent of my ability to get from A to B, and that would take a long time anyway. But I've got my life jacket on so I can bob around in the ocean if I need to. But that's whales. But then seals. See, now seals are starting to be a bit of a nuisance too. They're coming back in good numbers, which I'm pleased to report. But if you've got a good snapper on your line, there's a big chance they'll grab it and toss it up in the air and do some circus tricks with it, which you don't really want.
They do, yeah. And oftentimes the big smart bulls will lie under your tinny and just wait for you to catch the fish for them. They're sneaky.
Well, they're starting to gather on the north side of Cabbage Tree Island. They're smart. They lay there, and, of course, that's where the sun is, and there's no, the wind is gentle. And, like, I mean, it must be great being a seal. There's no exams. They don't have to go to work. They just lay around all day and just seem to enjoy life.
They're fat and happy, aren't they? They get a good feed. Those salmon schools that have been off the coast this year, I mean, they've got plenty of time to lie on the rocks and sunbake, haven't they? There's so much fish out there for them to eat. It's the Big Fish with Stinker and talking about odd things he's seen on the water. And you don't really carry a camera or a phone or anything, do you? You just sort of see it and we believe you.
Oh, that's good. Thank you. That's very good. That makes me feel better. But I don't take a phone because, I mean, I should. I know I should and my wife tells me I should. But I tend to get phone calls. And there's nothing worse than being out there and really enjoying nature and everything that it provides. And then the phone rings. Oh, good heavens. Well, that's no good. and I've got a good friend up at Tweed Heads who's a real estate agent. Oh, gee. I tell you what, that tests you out because the phone ringing every 5 minutes, the phone's ringing.
No, you can have that. You're supposed to go out for a peaceful time on the water. Speaking of peaceful time on the water, last Wednesday night where I live, the wind dropped, the tide was just getting to the bottom. We got some beautiful fresh bait, just enough to get us through a session, some lovely, lively nippers or yabbies, as you call them, and a beautiful big moonrise, the best sunset I've ever seen, the boys in the boat, and we caught some lovely fish. It was just magical. And I thought, this is as good as it gets, Stinker. You know, I don't know, there's something about being out there that just nourishes your soul.
Oh, I'm not over it yet. I must tell you something, that through the week, I met up with some friends whose daughter has married a young fellow, and they live in Geraldton in Western Australia, and he is a lobster man with a fish endorsement as well, and he has shacks on the Abrolhos Islands. Oh, dear me. I don't know whether you know much about the Abrolhos, but the photos and the stories I've heard about the Abrolhos and, of course, the Batavia, well, I'm busting to get there. And I'm in the process with a few mates of flying over to Perth probably, then flying to Geraldton, and then jumping on a boat to the Abrolhos and fish and just walk around and experience life in the on the Abrolhos Islands. Oh, how exciting is that? Oh,
that'll be fantastic. It's a real fishing paradise. And what a... Oh, we've got a recipe, too. Before we get back to some of the odd things on the water, we've got a recipe sent to us by one of your listeners who was... we had that great chat about the fellow who wanted to catch red rock cod. Remember that story? The bloke who had the huge $100,000 boat, $1 million boat, and all he wanted to do was catch red rock cod, which are a bit of a bycatch for many snapper fishermen. But one of our listeners sent a very interesting story, Matthew Ross, when we ran the story about you giving up the bait. That didn't last long, did it? he said, I'm going to go up there, that's your place, after I finish with the department, mentions a government agency, to get my head right. And I'm going out for a few days. Oh, that was, and then this other fellow said, Greg Wilson said, red rock cod. If you get on a patch, keep them and carefully fillet them, steam the flesh, and then press them into small plastic containers in the fridge, like we used to do with lamb's tongue, you know, or brawn. Push it in hard and weight it down. And then when it's cold, slice and eat cold on crackers with a squeeze of lemon. He said, a bit of mucking about, but better than lobster, in my opinion.
Well, it's a poor man's lobster, isn't it? It's the texture, and it's white. It's very white, and really, it's just got a bad reputation, really. And of course, if you get spiked, well, the reputation is well earned.
Oh, it's bad.
So be very aware of that. But I've eaten red rock cod, and I've put it in all sorts of mixtures, particularly in when you put a few things together in a big sort of mixture of whatever you might like to call
a chowder sort of thing.
A chowder, that's what I'm thinking about. A chowder. If you don't really put, you wouldn't put snapper in a chowder because it hasn't got the right texture. But you'd certainly put a rock cod in a chowder, and that would be sensational because it holds together. So if you put rock cod and lobster and maybe some pippies, get the sand out of the pippies. I mean, you can drop an oyster or two in as you wish, and then maybe some mussels, and some calamari, and then mix it all up into a big chowder and a bit of mornay sauce. Oh, dear me, I could go on and on and on. I mean, things like that are really just, you know, that's a great feeling to sit down to a meal of beautiful fresh seafood. But there's one story I haven't told you. Well, there's heaps of stories I haven't told you. But one other is a relationship I built up with an eagle, a sea eagle. And he saw me coming, or it might have been a she, I'm not too sure.
A sheagle.
And as soon as I get in Stinkpot and go across Finger Bay, they'd fly over the top of my boat and then fly behind me some 10 or 15 metres, and he'd watch me, and I'd watch him, her, and we'd finally get to the other side, and I'd have a few pilchards that I'd throw on the rocks, and just not much, just enough to keep him happy, or her. Dear oh me, I don't know, I'll call it from now on. Anyway, I felt as though after a while that I had trained the bird. But you know what? The bird had trained me.
That's right, Stinker. Oh, so many stories, so little time. Tight lines, mate. Have a good one. We'll catch you next week on The Big Fish.
Hooray, Scott.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
And big news from Coffs Harbour with Kendall Kramer catching a biggest bass, a beast of a bass. Kendall, you must be still walking on clouds.
Oh, you betcha. I love those cumulonimbuses. Bring those things right on.
Yes, they make the bass come to the surface, don't they, when that barometer's rising and the thunderstorms are brewing. We've got a bit of that around at the moment. Not too many cicadas, though, in my part of the world. What about up on the north coast? Are they starting to drum? Yeah, it seems a quiet cicada year, which is not great for the surface fishers. But you have caught the beast of a bass, your biggest ever bass in Queensland, in Somerset, renowned for its giant fish. Take us through this great moment.
Absolutely. So a friend and I in the Women's Rec League, we're competing in the Bass Electric Tour, as you guys know that we do all the time. Our last round is on Maroon Dam on around about the 22nd-ish, I'd have to look that up, of November. So we had a spark of an idea, and I'm so glad. Actually, I can't take credit for it. It was Trish, my friend, her idea to go and just have a little day out with Maddie Langford, who a lot of people know is pro fisherman, you know, goes competing around the world fishing for bass in all different countries and representing our country. Anyway, so went out on a guide with him, and we basically, the main aim was just to go out and see if we could pick his brains and figure out if there was anything that we weren't picking up or that we hadn't thought of yet to try and crack these bass in these dams, because it's so hard. Like, compared to fishing in the river, it's so hard to catch really good bass in dams. It's just a whole different beast. So that was our plan. And we went out with Maddie, and I reckon it was within probably the first half an hour to an hour I'd hooked on to my first bass, and that already a PB for me. So
how big was that one?
I think the first one was 49.
Oh, that's a beast. And what techniques were you using?
We were just using wasabi spoons.
Right, and they're a very simple, very simple lure.
Yeah, 27 gram, casting it out as far as you possibly could, and then basically just like quickly winding them back. Like, not super, super quick, but, like, you know, on the high side of medium. And then about a third of the way, winding them in, and then open the bail arm, let it drop for 3 seconds, and then, again, another third of the way in.
So you sort of let it flutter down and come up. Because very subtle action, those spoons, aren't they?
Yeah. Like, it was just kind of, like, in and out of the thermocline one, you know?
Mm.
Just so that we could get that spoon sort of like up above the thermocline line and then back down through it. And yeah, so it was kind of just like hopping it in and out of the line, and that's where the bass were holding.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because bass in the river hold in the snags, hold up in the edges, on the weed beds, and they're quite easy to find and target. But the fish spread out in the lakes, and so the temperature line was the spot where they were.
Yeah, it was. So there was a few fish in other areas that were sort of holding on the bottom, and Matty was explaining that they were, you know, the less active fish, and they weren't really that beneficial to target because they're probably not going to eat. You really have to find those fish in the dams that are really active, and you can tell that they're active because they're up in the thermocline line, and they're watching, because they're a pelagic fish, they're a predator, so they look up at the bait fish that's swimming above them, and they wait for their opportunity to jump up and grab the bait fish that they've been spying on.
Right, so that the spoons must be a good representation of the bait that's in there.
Yeah, well, essentially, and it's just the silver colour. Matty was basically saying it's just that like silver flash that really gets their attention. And it doesn't really matter, like, what colour's on the other side, but it's just that silver really makes a difference for him. So, yeah, we went with it. And like I said, within the first half an hour to hour, I'd landed my first one. And then within probably the next half an hour, I brought in another one. And that one, I think, was about 46 or something, a tiny bit smaller, but still
big
an epic
bass.
Fish.
Big bass. Yeah. Compared to river bass, there. I mean, you can catch 50 to 60 centimetre fish in the rivers, a fish of a lifetime, but Somerset, by the sound of it, is really a renowned big bass water. I think the world record for an Australian bass comes out of there, something just shy of 10 pounds. So, and then you got one over the magical 50. Is that right?
Yes. And then the highlight of my life came through. And yeah, so I had my camera on my head actually, so it was excellent because I could just like turn it on as soon as it happened. So I got a bite, and to be honest, it wasn't that aggressive. It was like, I thought it was going to be like, yeah, maybe 35 or 40. Wasn't that aggressive, and it was swimming to us. And anyway, when it realized that I was trying to hoik it up to the boat, that's when it really started to play up. And I was like, oh, I think this is bigger than what we think it is.
That's why you should never touch your drag in that situation, because you think, oh, this is a small fish. I'll tighten the drag, and then it goes and ping. So, and then the fight was on, eh? Did it go hard? Absolutely. It'd have to go very hard.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It took me for a couple of runs after it figured out that it was actually hooked onto something. It was a great fight. It was so good. And anyway, so we got it to the boat, and Muddy netted the fish for me, and we had a look at it, and I was like, holy crap, that thing's huge. And he was like, oh, that's awesome, man. That's such a great fish. And we were super stoked, and then we put it on the measure mat, and it was 53 centimetres, and I was like, oh, my God, that's so cool. And
wow.
Trish was like, hell yeah, that's such a great fish. We were having a little party on that boat, I tell you what. If anyone else was on that dam, they would have been able to hear us.
Oh, that's so good. You get so much joy out of it. It's The Big Fish with Kendall Kramer, just back from a bass trip to the big impoundments in Queensland. Of course, they've opened up what they call the Bass to Barra Trail. So in the south and southwest of Queensland, you've got the Barramundi, you've got some yellow belly Saratoga, things like that. And then the further north you go, the more that the Barramundi come into play, and it's become a multi-million dollar tourist trail for the travelling fishos. It really is a wonderful way to share a resource. A lot of these are water supply or agricultural dams, and having a good healthy stock of fish in there is actually a good thing, isn't it, Kendall? It means that the water quality is good for the other uses.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And after we hooked onto the bass, we went and chased a couple of yellow bellies, so we did all right there as well. Ended up with a 50 centimeter, and a couple got away. We won't talk about them.
what a great day out! Absolutely fantastic. And what did Maddie say about your 50 centimeter, 53 centimeter PB bass? Did he say that was a good one, or that they get a lot of those in Somerset?
Oh, look, I think he pulls up pretty good fish all the time because he's an excellent fisherman. So he's not you know, a stranger to that type of fish. But at the end of the day, he was like, that's an epic fish, mate. Like, well done. And, you know, he's had a chat to a couple of people about it, I think, since then. I've heard that he was pretty impressed with my skills. So
that's the way. Oh, look, practice makes perfect. Practice makes perfect. And you had a tough time on Hins Dam in the Gold Coast hinterland, didn't you? That was the Bass Electric.
Yep.
You caught fish, but it was not the easiest. So, you know, that's all practice, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was why I was so excited to go out with Maddie and just see if there was anything that I needed to hone or anything I needed to learn that I just hadn't figured out yet. And to be honest with you, I cannot recommend enough for people to go out with somebody who knows what they're doing. It doesn't matter how many fish you've caught. It doesn't matter how experienced you think you are. You can always learn something from somebody new. And honestly, it was an extremely valuable experience for both Trish and I. And we're feeling really prepared to go into our next round. And that's going to be the last round of the season until next year. So we're pretty excited to pull out the skills that Maddie taught us and see if we can come home with a few more fish this time.
On Maroon Dam, which is just a gorgeous place with bush all around, lily pads, lots of snags. It's a really natural looking impoundment full of huge bass too. So we'll get a report then. But tight lines, it's great to hear from you, and great that you've caught a 53 centimetre bass. And folks, we have the photographic evidence of Kendall Kramer wearing the GoPro on her head and holding this beast of a bass, and we'll put that up on our podcast when we get to publish that next week. Tight lines, Kendall Kramer.
Thank you very much, mate. And if anybody wants to see that fish get caught, I'll be putting the footage up when I've edited it.
All right, on the Women's Recreational Fishing League Facebook?
Yeah, I'll throw it up on the Women's Rec League Facebook and Instagram, and also Kendall Kramer Fishing also is my own stuff, so I'll probably put it up there too.
So we get that angler's point of view with the head-mounted camera, and you'll be almost feel as if you're catching it yourself. Tight lines, Kendall.
Thanks, mate. Speak to you soon.
Went fishing last Sunday and I caught a smelt. Put him in the pan and the fire he felt. of all the smells I ever smelt.
Well?
I never smelt a smelt like that smelt.
As the salmon swam up the river to spawn,
yeah,
he said to himself with a great big yawn,
ho-ho,
the next time I come up this way,
I'm gonna make the trip in a Chevrolet.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.